Kingston community since 1967.
And warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. I wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. And I know, I know, I know, I know.
Good evening. It is 7 o'clock. We are broadcasting from the basement of Carruthers Hall on unceded, occupied Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee land in so-called Canada. Call sign CFRC, available over the airwaves on 101.9 megahertz on the FM band and streaming live at CFRC.ca. You are listening to Prison Radio.
Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away.
The show will air every second Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., alternating between Prison Radio and Calls from Home. Prison Radio will feature interviews and analysis focused on prisons, abolition, and related topics. The U.S. and Canada are settler colonial nations occupying Indigenous territories. In these unjust states, there can be no justice. Calls from Home serves as a connection platform linking local incarcerated people and friends, family, and loved ones on the outside. Folks can call, email, or mail in messages and requests anytime before the show, and we will read or play messages and song requests live on air. To leave a message or send a request for the next Calls from Home episode, call 613-917-1390. That's 613-917-1390. Or email us at CFRCprisonradio@riseup.net. You can also mail in your messages to us at CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University. Where's the address? Hold on a sec. I got to get you that mailing address, y'all. Okay. Sorry, CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, K7L3N6. We have Calls from Home episodes planned for January 22nd, February 19th, and March 19, 2025. Please send in your messages and requests at least one day in advance, and remember to tune in at 7 p.m. to hear the show.
Tonight's show will deal with the little-known history of Oak Ridge Psychiatric Unit, a forensic psychiatric facility that was part of the Penetanguishene Maximum Facility. We will also have a short segment on Shenachley, who was mentioned during our December 25th show. A short content warning for tonight's episode: we will be discussing disturbing experiences of abuse, forced medication, and torture. Before we get into it, we will play a song by... we will play MK Ultra Blues by William Elliott Whitmore.
Back in 1953, we were riding high on victory. The Cold War's getting colder all the time. There's many ways to fight a war. It gets dirty more and more. The powers that be thinking outside the lines. So the
boys down at the CIA, getting curious one day, thinking of ways to get a leg up on the Reds. Through manipulation, experimentation, they thought they could save the nation by taking citizens and messing with their heads. Well, they rounded up some volunteers, but the volunteers had no idea they were about to be turned into laboratory rats. They were unwitting participants in the government experiments. They wouldn't be the same after that. They got those MK Ultra Blues, those MK Ultra Blues. Don't know what happens, guess we'll see when we give these soldiers LSD. Lock them in a room for a spell. Maybe they'll tell no lies, maybe they'll be hypnotized, or maybe they'll just think that they're in hell. But the thing about mind control is eventually takes its toll, can often have the opposite effect. People don't like to be misled, especially if it's by the feds. It's the type of thing that could make you lose respect. Sometimes subjects came real easy. In the door come old Ken Kesey, ready to see some universal truth. He was flying over the cuckoo's nest, taking the Kool-Aid acid test. I believe he was successful in his pursuit. Don't want those MK Ultra Blues, those MK Ultra Blues. People's minds were blown, other people's minds were shown that there's more to this here life than meets the eye. A peek behind the cosmic veil, visions from beyond the pale, a doorway to a different kind of life. So the drug they couldn't weaponize was a failure in some people's eyes, but was decidedly successful for some. What the CIA could not predict, people trying to get their kicks, taking LSD just for fun. It's a lesson to the powers that be, don't be messing with people's reality, making us forget who we are. Well, psychological manipulation is hard on a population, people can only be pushed so far. Don't want those MK Ultra Blues, those MK Ultra Blues. Oh, those MK Ultra Blues, those MK Ultra Blues.
Between 2009 and 2013, the government of Ontario spent $474 million to renovate the Waypoint Centre for Mental Health Care. Waypoint is mainly referred to as a hospital, but it also contains a forensic unit, which incarcerates people diagnosed with mental health disorders and who've been involved in the legal system. While the website of the rehabbed Waypoint Centre claims that, quote, the grounds and area surrounding Waypoint Centre for Mental Health Care are steeped in history, I would say it would be more appropriate to say the site is haunted by pain and oppression. The Anishinaabe land where Waypoint now sits was first appropriated by the British as part of the Treaty of Penetanguishene in 1798 and became the site of a military and naval base. After the decommissioning of the base in the mid-19th century, the empty barracks were refashioned into a prison for boys, known as the Ontario Reformatory for Boys. The young men and boys who were held there had been primarily convicted of petty crimes and generally deemed unmanageable. Prior to the opening of the site, they were imprisoned in Kingston Penitentiary. After a fire burned down the barracks in 1870, the imprisoned children and youth were the labor force for the reconstruction. In 1904, the building was refashioned as the Asylum for the Insane Penetanguishene. The Oak Ridge Unit was opened in 1933 as a special division for the criminally insane. It was the only maximum security forensic mental health center in Ontario at that time. It operated for over 80 years, and over that time, about half the population of Oak Ridge was part of what was called the Social Therapy Unit, or STU. Fast forward 118 years. The Ontario Court of Appeal upholds a ruling awarding damages in the amount of almost $10 million to 28 former inmates from Oak Ridge and the Social Therapy Unit. Their court claim reads as follows. Between 1965 and 1983, the plaintiffs, together with dozens of fellow inmates, were forced to participate in these discrete mind control / mind altering experiments, which incorporated abuse coupled with psychological and physical torture. The human experimentation initiated and conducted by Barker and Mayer and continued by O'Reilly was divided into three main programs / experiments in the STU at Oak Ridge. The 28 former inmates from this case represent only a small fraction of the number of people abused in this system during that time period. The case brought an action against the doctors at Oak Ridge and against the government of Ontario, under whose authority these people were involuntarily held and subjected to abuse and torture.
Jim Motherall was subject to a program at Oak Ridge called the Capsule. In the capsule, prisoners were stripped naked, handcuffed together, and confined up in a small, windowless, soundproof room. Doctors drugged prisoner in the capsule with a variety of hallucinogenic and experimental drugs such as LSD, scopolamine, and sodium amytal. These last two drugs are sometimes called truth serums. The capsule room had no furniture and no windows. It only had a toilet, drinking straws protruding from the walls for food and water, and a one-way mirror for doctors at Oak Ridge to watch the prisoners. Former prisoner at Oak Ridge, Jim Motherall, recalls, "They give you 6 shots a day of that stuff. By the end of the day, you didn't know who you were or what you were doing. You can't do that to many people over and over and call it treatment because that's a nice word people want to hear when the real word is torture." While at Oak Ridge, staff injected Motherall with LSD and scopolamine, studying the effects. Prisoners held in the social therapy unit were put into groups, with some prisoners chosen as therapeutic leaders over other prisoners. When deciding which prisoners to group together or pair in the capsule, Barker and Mayer tried to put prisoners diagnosed with schizophrenia together with those deemed psychopaths. Government officials praised Barker's use of prisoners as therapists for other prisoners because it allowed Oak Ridge to operate on a smaller budget than its counterparts, while still being able to claim the prisoners were in treatment.
Filmmakers created a documentary about Oak Ridge in 1971. During this time, the experiments and abuse was viewed by the mainstream as cutting-edge treatment. Here is a clip from that documentary describing the capsule.
These patients are in a small room measuring 8 feet by 10 feet. There are no doors and no windows that can be seen from the inside. Food is sucked in through straws placed in small holes around the room. An open toilet and a wash basin are in one corner. A two-way mirror in the ceiling and videotape cameras in the walls allow for observation of these patients. This room is known as the capsule.
A man named Steve Smith is a survivor of Oak Ridge. He's been trying to bring attention to the abuses that he and so many others suffered for many years. In fact, he published a book about his experience called The Psychopath Machine, A Story of Resistance and Survival in 2016. And you can also see his collection of resources online at thepsychopathmachine.com. On that website, he shares some clips detailing his experience, and one clip that we're going to listen to now is from a visit that he made to Oak Ridge after it had been closed, and he's speaking about his experience of being drugged and how much it messed him up.
Drugs, just constant drugs, constant pressure. After several weeks of drug treatments, scopolamine, amphetamine,
That's the spot where I picked up the corner of the mattress, and little specks of dust on the floor that you can see there even now was all living, squirming bugs, worms, insects, hallucination.
Drugs were a central feature incorporated into all three parts of the social therapy unit programs. We heard earlier about the capsule, a sensory deprivation chamber where naked inmates were chained together and observed by doctors. Documents from the Barker versus Barker court case show that there were instances in the capsule in which prisoners raped each other while being observed by the doctors with no intervention. There were two other programs taking place in the social therapy unit at the time. These were the MAP program, Motivation, Attitude, and Participation, and DDT, or Defense Disruptive Therapy.
Defense Disruptive Therapy, or DDT, was a mainstay of social therapy unit programs. Simply put, it used high doses of drugs and alcohol to intoxicate individuals to make them more psychologically vulnerable. Once in this state, doctors and fellow patients would break down their psychological defenses. People with a history of using drugs were particularly targeted for DDT. Psychiatrists had people sign forms indicating their informed consent, but admitted later that, quote, some patients who have had experience with drugs on the street might just want a high. Once leaving Oak Ridge, many survivors would struggle with their addiction to the drugs and alcohol that psychiatrists had prescribed in large quantities for prolonged periods. An excerpt from Dr. Barker's writing about the DDT program reads as follows. We find that the pulse rate usually rises by the fourth day to a rate of 140 to 160 when the patient is standing, and it is suspected that this and the occasional hyperventilating and vomiting that occur are mostly due to the extreme anxiety evoked. There is always a reduction in the patient's appetite, and he eats little during the period of administration. Sleeping is curtailed or eliminated completely. The patient experiences delirious episodes which are accompanied by hallucinations and floridly psychotic behavior. Contact with reality is highly irregular and recall of events is patchy, the main presenting feature being a general lack of pattern to the sequence of experience and behavior. Considerable paranoia is exhibited by most patients. However, what seem to be the most useful effects occur during the weeks after drug administration, which appears to be a defense readjustment period. It has been found that patients experience more anxiety for periods of up to 2 months following the termination of treatment. They seem less well-defended, more sensitive, restless, and troubled. Our experience suggests that subsequent courses of DDT increase
Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Hi! Follow the Yellow Brick Road each week on Sundays from 8 to 9 p.m. And I've got a show for you. Tune in to get your weekly fix of British music, culture, and lots of fun. I'll see you there. Ta-ra!
Considerable paranoia.
In my Mersey paradise.
During the weeks after drug administration, which appears to be a defense readjustment period. It has been found that patients experience more anxiety for periods of up to 2 months following the termination of treatment. They seem less well-defended, more sensitive, restless, and troubled. Our experience suggests that subsequent courses of DDT increase the degree and duration of the anxiety experienced. We think also that the more prolonged and complete the period of delirium, the more are these delayed effects displayed. In Dr. Barker and Dr. Mayer's professional writings, they allude to a process of rebuilding the patient's psyche. However, their professional work didn't provide an explanation of how they would do this, and when asked about it in court, neither doctor was able to explain. The court proceeding documents read, "It appears that the doctors had given substantial thought to breaking down their patients' personalities, but neither of them had turned their minds in a serious way to reconstructing them."
For the MAP, what happened at first was that prisoners were put into a brutal period of solitary confinement and sensory deprivation. Afterwards, other inmates were brought in to monitor him and give him the so-called opportunity to gain privileges, like being able to wear clothes or a cushion to sit on. He was supposed to stay immobile while the other inmates monitored his every breath and move. In 1977, the Ontario government authored a report about Oak Ridge, and this is how they described the MAP program.
During the group, he sits on the terrazzo floor with his feet straight out in front of him in a tension position. His fingers are intertwined, and he is given a square area of about 3 square feet in front of him within which he may look. He must respond positively, feedback positively, and participate in the described MAP way. He may use nothing but good English. He may move only 4 times during a session of about 4 hours, and then only after being given permission to do so by the teacher. In order to leave MAP, a patient has to have 14 consecutive perfect days. A perfect day involves no slips of the tongue, no unauthorized moving, no keeping others waiting, no lack of participation, no disruption, and beyond that, a satisfactory demonstration of motivation, attitude, and participation. This means perfect posture, deportment, and language. Behavior, feeling, and thinking are all studied by the group and are continually under discussion and observation.
Remember that these are individuals who are being heavily drugged with LSD and other drugs. We heard before Steve Smith talking about the experience of being drugged and hallucinating and not knowing what's going on. So this was a period of enforced immobility while super, super high, not wearing clothes, and being monitored by other inmates, including folks with very violent histories. Between 2009 and 2013,
Gazelle va quitter l'allée. Pour le mener non côté pour me garder libre. Avant d'aller me darer, mais pour nous célébrer. Quand mille le monde guide, yo besoin parler. Li dit m'gon salade de mi. Qui ça? Faut qu'on leve nap soti. Côté, ça son bagam bakadou. Ok. Qui s'en besoin pour n'aller? Mais on si mallette là, barré pour faire ça, il y a des ailes sous l'île. Y'a des gens la baselle, il prête pour l'aller, ça c'est des piles petits. En pile, monte ses langues vipères, gardez devant, pas oublier des airs. Souvenirs en tête, yo archivé, paquet au pape, j'emblie, yo. Gain de cola à 3 pâtés, on tique un masque à temps sous table, on relax, on prend si même, j'en pas m'pas occupé, yo. Même gain pour mal et vérité, on sait pour cap bien avem. Gardez yo, ça yo, quoi, j'en bouquet, c'est pas au rêve lié. Même gain pour mal et vérité, on sait pour cap bien avem. Gardez yo, ça yo, quoi, j'en bouquet, c'est pas au rêve lié. Si malade, moins gazelle, m'a quitté l'allée. Pour le mener non côté, pour me garder libre. Avant d'aller me darer, mais pour nous célébrer. Grand mille monde guide, yo besoin parler. Wele, li dit m'gon salade de mi. Qui ça? Faut qu'on leve nap soti. Côté, ça son bagam bakadou. Ok. Qui ça me besoin pour n'aller? Mais mon si mallette là, barré pour faire ça, li gain des ailes sous l'île. Y'a des gens la baselle, li prête pour l'aller, ça c'est des piles petits. En pile, mon c'est langue vipère, gardez devant, pas oublier des airs. Souvenez dans tête, yo archivé, paquet au pape, j'emblie, yo. Gain de cola à 3 pâtés, on tique un masque à temps sous table, on relax, on prend si ven, ven, pam, pas occupé.
Okay, folks, so you are listening to Prison Radio on CFRC, and We just heard the track Zelle by Wally and Mathieu Charbonneau. This is a recent release from Montreal artists. And we've been listening to our content about the really disturbing psychiatric torture that took place at Oak Ridge in the 60s and 70s. So we're going to get into the second part of our feature now. And we'll also be hearing after this a clip from another podcast that interviewed Steve Smith, who had been an inmate at Oak Ridge in the time that we're talking about. So here is part two.
Themselves committed to Oak Ridge in one of three ways. One, by being found not guilty by reason of insanity. Two, if a psychiatrist committed them to Oak Ridge under the Mental Health Act. Someone with a history of mental illness could be committed to Oak Ridge for a temporary pretrial detention. Temporary pretrial detentions were often extended under the Mental Health Act, meaning that someone who was sent to Oak Ridge for 30 days for pretrial detention could end up spending a year or more at Oak Ridge. The inmates at Oak Ridge did not have sentences, aside from 30-day pretrial detentions, outlining how much time they had to serve. Therefore, most prisoners had indeterminate sentences. Their release from Oak Ridge was dependent on the professional opinion of the very staff psychiatrists who experimented with them. One of the youngest prisoners committed to Oak Ridge was a 17-year-old involuntarily committed after expressing suicidal intentions at Queen Street Mental Health Center, what is now known as the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, or CAMH. In another case, a Jamaican immigrant was sent to Oak Ridge after being found not guilty by reason of insanity of first-degree murder. In the years leading up to the murder, this person had suffered depression and anxiety that he attributed to the, quote, feeling that police were following him and causing him to lose jobs, end quote, for which doctors diagnosed him with paranoid schizophrenia. He was eventually deported to Jamaica. Most news articles explain that Oak Ridge housed the worst of the worst, criminally insane murderers and serial rapists. But as we can see, the reality is that there were also many prisoners convicted of less serious crimes, nonviolent crimes, or no crimes at all. Psychiatrists didn't select prisoners for the social therapy programs based on past convictions or violent behavior. They targeted people who they believed, in the words of Elliot Barker, were, quote, throwaway people, end quote, that no one would stand up for. Elliot Barker described how his role as director of the program was, quote, to work with the key power players, the key attendants who had informal powers, and the key patients who had informal power and me. And I was like a politician negotiating. I had total control. The superintendent of Pentangachene Maximum Security Hospital, Dr. Barry A. Boyd, hired recent graduate Elliot Barker in 1965 as a staff psychiatrist. Barker was promoted 1 year later to create and direct the social therapy unit. Barker took inspiration from a number of experimental therapies as well as non-therapeutic sources. For example, Barker had visited a Maoist re-education camp shortly before beginning at Penetang and openly admits to taking inspiration from Chinese authorities who strapped prisoners together so that they became a physical representation of national unity and subservience to the state. In a 1970s documentary about the death penalty, Barker is quoted saying, "There are guys who are so dangerous, nobody is going to affect that. It's better than curtailing parole, which is what they were doing, to hang a few people, even though it was wrong. And you can pick out a few people who are absolutely dangerous and absolutely untreatable and hang them." Barker gained a reputation as the hanging psychiatrist because of these sentiments. Dr. Gary Mayer would become the director of the STU once Barker resigned to open his own private practice. As a recent medical school graduate, Mayer had worked under Barker in the STU, although he had no formal psychiatric or forensic qualifications. During his tenure as director, Mayer increased LSD experimentation.
insatiable love for the dead.
Tune in on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. for Dark Side of the Tune with me, your host, Tommy. The show where we look at the weird, the moody, the loud, and the unabashed. If the song falls on the dark side of music, then you can bet that we will play it. So join me Tuesdays at 3 p.m. See you there.
Joe's Mill is a musical instrument lending library located in the Tet Center at 370 King Street West in Kingston, Ontario. Started by the late Joe Chitlin, who wanted everyone to experience the joy of playing an instrument, Joe's Mill has over 1,000 musical instruments and resources for you to lend out so you can take up a new hobby or get back into an old one. Stop by, register for only $15, and then take out an instrument at any time for free. Joe's Mill is located at the Tet Center on the lower floor in Unit 110. Visit joesmill.org for more information.
Want to keep up with all things Limestone local news? Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM at 5 p.m. every Tuesday for Kingston Currents. Stay well informed about the issues and developments that matter most to Kingstonians. Join me, your host and CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, as we deep dive into the latest Kingston news, featuring interviews every week with the movers and shakers who shape our city. Learn more about the people, places, and events that make Kingston truly unique. If you want to listen to Kingston Currents on the go or revisit episodes, you can also head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Kingston Currents is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, and Queen's University. If you have a local news story you want to share, you can contact news@cfrc.ca. Keep up with all things current in Kingston on Kingston Currents on CFRC 101.9 FM.
There is just so much good stuff to listen to on CFRC. So that's just an example of what you can expect. Right now, you're listening to Prison Radio. We're about halfway through the show, and we're partway through our piece on the Oak Ridge Psychiatric Facility. We're going to get into the last segment now. And actually, this is an excerpt from a podcast called Nighttime, an interview from 2022 with Steve Smith, who was a prisoner at Oak Ridge. We heard from him earlier in the show. And in this clip, he's talking about his experience at Oak Ridge and some of his analysis. He's been basically an activist trying to bring attention to this horrible history for a very long time. The clip you're going to hear begins with Steve talking about how he ended up at Oak Ridge.
It was essentially kidnapping. I actually have letters between the administrator of one place and another requesting me as a, in exchange for someone else. Not a transfer, but an exchange for a different patient. An exchange. So a trade. Give me him because I fit with what they were looking for. Mm-hmm. I was exactly what they were looking for, which was a kind of not a lot of resources, not a lot of family backing you up. There's a wandering kid could disappear like that. Mm-hmm. Just a vulnerable subject.
But when you hear today a story of human trafficking where someone gets caught up in organized crime or something, they find some vulnerable kid and whisk them away for like sex work or something. I think it seems like when I read your story, I kind of see you as the like medical experiment version of that sort of story. They found someone who was vulnerable and somewhat on their own, and you get scooped up in this. But for people who are unfamiliar with the Oak Ridge Asylum, it's notorious today as a place where this weird kind of treatment was happening I guess some of them were mentally ill, but on people. Tell me a bit about when you ended up there. Like, did it seem like a typical mental home, hospitals setting?
No. This is a prison. It's the most outrageous prison you could imagine.
Now, you've been referring to some of your time in Oak Ridge as in the program. And now I believe I know what you're referring to, but people who looked into Oak Ridge and especially looked into the dark side of it have come across Dr. Elliot Barker. I understand he treated you, and I'll ask you a bit about him, but and your experiences with him. But he seems to be kind of the person responsible for some of the more like kind of bizarre programs that happened in there. Tell me about how you came across it. Like, do you remember first meeting Dr. Barker?
His story is incredibly interesting and key to much of this. As you know, the rabbit hole goes really deep and there's lots of facets you can follow, but Barker, his life and how he got into this is very important. So in 1965, he graduated from the University of Toronto with a degree in psychiatry. Dr. Boyd, who was the administrator of Oak Ridge, gave him a one-year sabbatical to travel to various places in the world, including communist China. This is 1965. China was not open to the West, but Barker went there. I can prove this. He went to China and East Germany and several other communist behind the Iron Curtain countries that you just don't get to, and went to prison camps, was taken to and shown various prison camps and re-education programs. He studied and learned and carried this back to Oak Ridge, where he put the same programs into practice in Oak Ridge. I actually have the plan developed in China of how to force people into compliance. Soft torture, but really, really harsh psychologically. Wow. It's called MAP, Motivation, Attitude, and Participation, MAP. Barker carried this program that he learned from prison re-education camps in communist countries, carried this into Oak Ridge and refined it with the use of different drugs than what they had in East or in communist countries. LSD being the big one. Mm-hmm. Lots of, that was his thing. That was finally his downfall. Barker was the source of this program, but behind it was Boyd. He was the guy he was the administrator. I have so many letters to and from Boyd regarding different problems, each one of them more extreme than the previous. There's no end to this. This wasn't just out of control experiments. These were malicious people doing criminal acts, and they were never called to answer, except, you know, there's a 20-year lawsuit that was recently settled.
I didn't know it was settled. No, I did happen upon it.
Yeah, it's settled, finally. Mm-hmm. So here's where it stands. I started this lawsuit in 1997. So at the time that I went to Toronto to record that video, that documentary with CBC, at the same time, I went to a lawyer and told him the whole story. So he was quite interested because I'm there with CBC. Mm-hmm. He saw, you know, he's a lawyer. He saw something, mm-hmm. even though the story was wacko, mm-hmm. and out there. And, you know, normally I would have been kicked out of his office if I even got 5 minutes of his time. Mm-hmm. But because I was there with CBC, he saw something. So, long story short, which I can't do, I retained this lawyer. So I was in this lawsuit for about 10 years. But eventually, they forced me out of the lawsuit because I couldn't prove that I suffered enough damage. Mm. See, my life is really good. I'm very successful, financially independent, and have a really good life. So I can't prove damages. Whereas there's a bunch of other people that they solicited, they advertised in a newspaper and found, I believe it was initially 33 people that had also gone through this program and formed a class action lawsuit.
Wow.
And forced me out of it. Mm. So this lawsuit went on for 20 years, 20 plus years. There was a judgment, I think, 2 years ago. Maybe more than 2 years ago, in favor of the litigants, all in favor. It was a $10 million suit. Then the government appealed it. They would not admit that they did this. So it was under appeal for the last 2 years. But recently, the Court of Appeal rejected all of the reasons for the appeal and determined how much each litigant was to be awarded. So I know people involved in it, so they'll tell me when the award finally reaches them and how much they get and how much the lawyers take. So these people are suffering.
Was Jeremy Dutcher with a song from his most recent album called Poma Wusowinawok Wonakia Wolutuwok. And I apologize for my mispronunciation. But the title of the song translates in English to People Are Rising. And Jeremy Dutcher is a classically trained two-spirit song carrier, composer, activist, and member of Nikotkuk, also known as Topeak First Nation, in Eastern Canada. And that was a track that was requested by a friend and follower of the show. So thanks for your request and your interest in Prison Radio and Calls from Home. You are listening to Prison Radio. We've been playing all of our content related to the Oak Ridge Psychiatric Unit. We know that there's some really heavy and disturbing stuff. We've been doing the Prison Radio Collective, you know, some of our members, we've been doing a deep dive into this, and there's a lot of history and a lot to unpack. And we're planning to continue our research and feature more details about Oak Ridge and the psychiatrists involved that story in a future episode. So keep listening to Prison Radio to hear more. We're gonna switch gears now and move into our final segment dealing with political prisoners. And stay tuned for a little bit more music. And we're just thanks for listening.
This week and every week on Prison Radio, we encourage our listeners to get in touch with a prisoner. Writing to someone is one of the most impactful ways of breaking through some of the isolation the prison creates. We have a couple general writing tips if this is your first time. Sharing drawings, poems, and pictures is great, but usually shouldn't make them larger than 8x10. Money, but you need to look up the specific rules of the institution. Put the prisoner's name and number on all of the pages of your letter in case they are separated. Beware the person you are writing to will not be the only person reading your letter. Assume law enforcement will read and see everything you send in. Be clear if you are planning on continuing communication or just sending a one-time letter. Either is fine, but keeping expectations clear is really helpful. You can send a stamped envelope for someone to use to send mail back, though there is usually a limit on the number of extra postage you can include, so look it up if you want to send more than a couple letters worth. If you're writing to someone who speaks a different language than you, try to use a translation app. Maybe include some poetry or writing in the language of the person you're writing to. In honor of our interview in our last show and our current fundraiser, we encourage you to write to Chinachli. Chinachli is an artist, organizer, and collective member from Certain Days, Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar. You can learn more about the calendar from collective members Josh and Sarah, who we interviewed on our December 25th show. Find it at cfrc.ca or learn more about the calendar at certaindays.org. You can also pick up a copy of this year's calendar to help support the show from AKA Autonomous Social Center at 75 Queen Street in downtown Kingston. AKA is open Mondays 3 to 7 p.m. and Thursdays 5 to 7 p.m. You can also get some stationery supplies for letter writing while you're there. Chinachli, Noel for Seed, is a community organizer and Chicano movement revolutionary currently imprisoned in Texas. Formerly known as Alvaro Luna Hernandez, he works diligently in the barrio on civil and human rights issues, known widely for his legal skills. Gaining international recognition as the national coordinator for the Ricardo Aldepe Guerra Defense Committee, Chinachli was instrumental in helping free Mexican national Aldepe Guerra from Texas death row, where he had been framed for the murder of a police officer. In 1996, Chinachli was arrested after disarming a county sheriff who was attempting to shoot him. After defending himself at trial, Chinachli was sentenced to 50 years in prison for aggravated assault, a charge he vehemently denies. While in prison, Chinachli continues to write frequently, has helped organize multiple prison strikes, and has been held in solitary confinement for the last 19 years and counting. Chinachli is a prolific jailhouse lawyer, as referenced by Mubia Abu-Jamal in his book, Jailhouse Lawyers, Prisoners Defending Prisoners, versus the USA. Ginachili assists many prisoners in seeking new trials and filing suits against the repressive, inhumane Texas prison system. For more information, see freealvero.net. You can write to Ginachili at Alvero Luna Hernandez, number 255735, WG McConnell Unit, 3001 Emily Drive, Beeville, Texas, 78102. We will also post this information on our social media pages, and you can find it and get a beautiful 2025 calendar at certaindays.org. And don't forget, if you're in Kingston, you can pick up a beautiful 2025 Certain Days calendar from AKA at 75 Queen Street. Next up, we'll be reading from the 2025 Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar. This is an essay by Ginachili for the month of March, so get your calendar and check it out. On opening America's prison gates and freeing dragons, the global struggle for international human rights and revolutionary change. Quote, civil rights sit our struggle for freedom solely within the context of the United States. Human rights, on the other hand, situate our struggle internationally, alongside struggles against colonialism and foreign domination that is taking place in Africa, Asia, the Caribbean, and Latin America. End quote. Malcolm X, By Any Means Necessary, 1964. Today, 2024, there are more than 2.2 million persons incarcerated in the United States, more per capita than any other nation in the world. These statistics have earned America the title of the prison capital of the world and the prison house of nations, as noted by many historians, scholars, legal academia, and writers. The government's own justice statistics show that 80,000 to 100,000 prisoners today are caged in solitary confinement or in some form of restricted housing, also called administrative segregation and supermax control units. These disparate astronomical numbers show the true genocidal nature of America's criminal justice system, in that people of color, namely Africans, Chicanos, Latinos, and Native Americans, are disproportionately represented in the U.S. prison industrial complex. From their very creation, Texas prisons, like the white racist settler colonial supremacist state and slave trade industries that gave birth to them, were also racially segregated as U.S. society was too. Black people and Chicanos were together segregated for white prisoners, with white prisoners receiving better prison jobs and treatment, having their own racial caste system of inmate guard mercenaries or building tenders who were armed and worked for the wardens to control the prison population. In the history of Texas prisons, courageous Black and Chicano jailhouse lawyers and prison advocates have always been at the forefront of the prison movement to change the barbaric and racist conditions that existed then and continue to exist today, as civil rights have been and are a fallacy under capitalism. Many of these courageous prisoners, like Alan Lamar, David Ruiz, Fred Cruz, Johnny Martinez, Bob Cruz, Lee Otis Johnson, Alberto Hernanda, and the author of this paper, Ginachili, aka Alvera Luna Hernandez, then and now continue to take on the role of prison organizers. Coming full circle, I have taken on the position as Field Marshal, Texas Region of Prison Lives Matter, PLM, a contingent of the best jailhouse lawyers and prison abolitionists under the leadership of Kwame Shakur. See prisonlivesmatter.org and freealvero.net. PLM is a robust liberation-oriented movement that embraces all forms of struggle, civil defense, and political re-education in the creation of cadres who have stepped up and accepted leadership roles, in redemption and creating a new revolutionary awareness inside prison walls, in transforming minds and lives, in discovering our humanity and our love for the revolution, as our mentor and martyr, the dragon George Jackson, taught us. See his book, Blood in My Eye, printed before he was assassinated on August 21st, 1971, at the San Quentin Adjustment Center by Prison Pigs. Only through intense, consistent, protracted, and clear-eyed study and struggle in discovering our humanity and the enormous revolutionary potential prisons can create, and embracing a true revolutionary internationalism using a united front paradigm of uniting all colonized, enslaved colonies under U.S. imperialism, can we become a fighting force to be reckoned with in fighting for true liberation. Not only must we struggle to free working class labor from capital, but also to realize the gravity of the crossroads we as an oppressed class are in, of the planet that is threatened by climate change and the fetishes of oil tycoons and their corporations that rule society and the U.S. government and its court systems. Our work is crucial to creating a new revolutionary culture and ethos of collective community care, love, unity, solidarity, freedom, justice, and restorative and reparations justice for past and current victims of colonialism. Dismantle colonialism and imperialism before they burn up planet Earth and destroy humanity and civilization. Again, that essay was by Shinachli, and it's in Certain Days, the 2025 Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar.
We're coming to the end of our show tonight. Tune in on January 22nd, 2 weeks from now, for our next Calls from Home. CFRC Prison Radio reaches Kingston, Gananoque, Brockville, Napanee, Tyendinaga, Belleville, Smith Falls, Wolf Island, and Watertown, New York, and everywhere in between. The broadcast range includes 7 institutions: Millhaven, Bath, Collins Bay, Frontenac, Joyceville, Pittsburgh, Quincy Detention Center, and Cape Vincent Correctional Facility. You can call or text us at 613-917-1390 to leave us messages, song dedications, and requests for friends, loved ones, and comrades at one of these institutions to be played on Calls from Home. Feel free to email your messages and requests to CFRC Prison Radio at riseup.net. You can also message us on Instagram at CFRC Prison Radio. You can send us a letter at CPR C-O CFRC Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, K7L 3N6. Find our contact info and more information at CFRC Prison Radio on Instagram, CFRC Prison Radio on Facebook, and the Facebook group Calls from Home Prison Radio, Kingston, Ontario. Although I will note, please don't send us Facebook messages. And you can also find archived episodes of the show on blueheronmedia.org or cfrc.ca. We'll leave you tonight with the song Let's Go by one of our favorite artists, Big Freedia. Yeah.